is for what's Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Syria's Foreign Minister Walid Mualim Sunday rejected a UN proposal granting autonomy to the embattled eastern sector of Aleppo, where rebels seeking to topple the government of Bashar al-Assad have been locked in a months-long battle with Russian-backed government forces. Mualim insisted the rebels, who he refers to as terrorists, must leave eastern Aleppo. He said no government would allow its citizens to be left as hostages to thousands of gunmen. The proposal was made by UN envoy to Syria, Staffan de Mistura, in Damascus to allow rebel-held sector to be governed by a local administration if jihadists fighting alongside the rebels leave the city.
Local administration should be respected and left. And here we had a major disagreement. The government, through Minister Mualim, categorically rejected the idea of maintaining the current local administration.
The UN envoy proposed sending a UN verification team to Aleppo to examine claims the government's aircraft have bombed and knocked out a series of hospitals. At least 240 people have reportedly been killed in eastern Aleppo and the rebel-held countryside west of the city since Tuesday. Voters in Mali went to the polls Sunday for the first election since a 2012 coup aimed at filling posts in the restive left, vacant since Islamist militants took advantage of a Tuareg rebellion. Militants were driven out the next year by a French intervention force, but continued to pose a security threat to UN peacekeepers. Thousands of local officials were on the ballot across the country as the government seeks to implement a peace plan. This is VOA News. Leaders of 21 Asia-Pacific nations ended their annual summit in Lima, Peru, Sunday, calling on a resistance to trade protectionism and to protect the Trans-Pacific Partnership Free Trade Pact with or without the United States. They pledged to work toward ratifying TPP as a path to sustainable, balanced, and inclusive growth, despite the political climate. President Obama addressed the issue in his closing remarks.
When it comes to trade, I believe that the answer is not to pull back or try to erect barriers to trade, given our integrated economies and global supply chains that would hurt us all. But rather, the answer is to do trade right, making sure that it has strong labor standards, strong environmental standards, that it addresses ways in which workers and ordinary people can benefit rather than be harmed by global trade.
President-elect Donald Trump has strongly criticized the TPP and vowed to end U.S. participation. Haiti Sunday held a long-delayed election, casting ballots for president and a legislature. More than 6 million people registered to vote to choose among nearly 30 candidates for president vying to succeed Michel Martelly, who left the presidency in February. A caretaker government has been in place since. One of the perceived front-runners, Jovenel Moïse, said political stability is key in Haiti. Without it, no country on earth can talk about development. The top two finishers are to meet in a January 29 runoff unless one candidate receives more than 50% of the vote. Results of an October 2015 election were annulled following massive allegations of fraud and misconduct. Egypt Sunday said it will try 300 jihadist suspects over plots to assassinate President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi, the Saudi crown prince, as well as four attacks in the Sinai. About half the suspects are already in custody and have been referred to a military court for alleged membership in the Sinai state, an affiliate of Islamic State. President-elect Donald Trump met Sunday with potential cabinet members. Mr. Trump, using his luxury golf resort in Bedminster, New Jersey, as his meeting place, spoke with a number of officials, including former Republican presidential nominee Mitt Romney. Appearing on U.S. television Sunday, Vice President-elect Mike Pence, head of the transition team, was asked about diversity in the new administration.
The president-elect is a man who knows his mind. He knows where he wants to take this country. He laid out an agenda to make America great again, to have America standing tall in the world, to revive the American economy, and he's going to surround himself with men and women from diverse backgrounds who are going to help him move that agenda forward.
Mr. Trump is expected to make more announcements soon. A strong 6.4 magnitude earthquake jolted western Argentina Sunday. It was felt as far away as Santiago, Chile. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Monday, November 21st, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Today's Black Monday in Sierra Leone to protest the increase in fuel prices.
The Black Monday is asking Sierra Leoneans to wear black to work to register their disagreement over the hike of fuel price and also the detention of the student who merely shared a message on WhatsApp, who has been charged to court and detained at the maximum security prison.
Emmanuel Safa Abdullahi is one of the leaders of the Sierra Leone Renaissance Movement. We look at West Africa and the growing number of African countries who are withdrawing from the ICC. Returning Somali refugees find it hard to get their old lives back. And a spokesman for Riek Machar says he did not ask for pardon from President Salva Kiir.
Dr. Riek Machar has not and will never, ever ask for that. In fact, he is asking for Salva Kiir to step down so that the killing of people is stopped.
Myeong Kwon is the SPLA opposition representative to the United Nations, and Women's Football Africa Cup of Nations kicks off in Cameroon. Those stories, plus Samson O'Malley with a roundup of African sports and our listener of the day, are all coming up on Daybreak Africa. Today is Black Monday in Sierra Leone, whereby citizens are asked to wear black to work every Monday to protest the government's decision to raise the price of fuel. 2 weeks ago, the government ended subsidy on petroleum products, raising the prices of gasoline, kerosene, diesel, and fuel oil. The government said removing the subsidy was necessary to address the loss of revenue caused by the Ebola crisis, as well as declining global prices of iron ore. Lawyer Emmanuel Safa Abdullahi is one of the leaders of a new national movement called the Sierra Leone Renaissance Movement, which is pressuring the government to end the price hike. Abdullahi tells me that in addition to Black Monday today, the group is also calling on the government to release from detention student Teresa Umbomaya, who has been arrested and charged with crime of incitement for sharing information on social media about the price hike.
The Black Monday is asking Sierra Leoneans to wear black to work to register their disagreement over the hike of fuel price and also the detention of the student who merely shared a message on WhatsApp, who has been charged to court and detained at the maximum security prison.
The government said that the students, particularly Teresa Umbomaya, was arrested for serious crime of incitement.
Well, I don't know what the meaning of serious incitement is. Since the issue of fuel increment in price came up, there have been general messages going on social media, and people have been forwarding these messages. There was one particular message which was calling on students to demonstrate against the fuel price, to process through Freetown. And I think this is the message that Teresa Mbuma forwarded into a group, and that's the only offense she has committed. Now that she's been charged for incitement to cause violence and also publishing false news intended to create fear. I don't think that's really particularly correct, because if you have a country where we profess to be democratic, the fundamental constitutional right of freedom of expression should take precedence over subordinate legislations that are Indian freedom of expression.
The government has said that prior to her arrest that she and associates allegedly threatened public safety.
Myself and my colleagues in the Renaissance Movement, we are representing Teresa. We haven't seen evidence in which she has particularly threatened. There was a general message going around, and it's becoming a practice that people find messages on social media and they just forward it to groups without any particular intent to cause any harm. But it's a message that was going around purportedly coming from a student union executive. So that itself is something that we thought heavy-handed. Government is being heavy-handed with a particular student because this is a general issue. The issue of price increment is a general issue which Sierra Leoneans should face as a welfare issue rather than being politicized and using old archaic laws that are supposed to have been expunged from the law books of Sierra Leone.
Do you think that the Sierra Leone government trying to restrict what is put on social media?
Yeah, I think so. I think particularly so. That's the case because this is not the first time that government, every time the government is boxed onto a corner about policies and issues, you know, they come after social media because social media, of course, we all know, has become the greatest tool of educating and passing information which government would normally not want people to have access to.
I took a look at a release from the Sierra Leone Government Ministry of Information and Communications saying that the government is committed to protecting the fundamental rights of Sierra Leoneans with respect to freedom of expression and of the press, but at the same time calling on the social media groups to regulate the content of what is posted.
You cannot regulate the content of what is posted. I think this is a fruitless endeavor, and I think it's only a kind of fear-mongering, which the action of government is intended to do.
Emmanuel Safa Abdoulaye is one of the leaders of the Sierra Leone Renaissance Movement. He was speaking with me from the capital, Freetown. Three African countries have signaled to the United Nations Security Council their plans to formally withdraw from the International Criminal Court, the ICC. Burundi, Gambia, and South Africa say the court appears to target Africans. Russia, which is a veto-wielding member of the Security Council, also said it was withdrawing from the Hague-based court. Dr. Alan White, the former chief of investigations for the United Nations Special Court for Sierra Leone, talks to viewers Peter Clotty about Africa's withdrawal from the ICC. First, Peter asks him whether criticisms of Chief Prosecutor Fatou Bensouda, who hails from Gambia herself, that she has been lenient in investigating President Yahya Jammeh for alleged human rights abuses are warranted.
Well, you know, certainly that's been a topic of discussion, and there is documented evidence publicly, open source information and otherwise, demonstrating human rights violations there. And certainly these are very serious issues, and I know she's, at least from what I understand, not opened up a case in that area, and it's a very difficult situation for her because she's from the Gambia. Mm-hmm. And I know she wants to be viewed as being fair and making sure that before she pursues those issues, that she certainly has the evidence to justify opening an investigation and pursuing a prosecution. So I think she's cautious, and she's going to get criticism for that. You know, whether or not it's valid at this point in time, we'll remain to be vigilant on that.
Mm. Let's go back to the region and go back to Liberia. Soon there will be elections there. Correct. What is your take about the current situation leading up to the election?
Well, certainly one of the things that has never gone away, particularly since our efforts in Sierra Leone, is to seek restorative and retributive justice. The 2008 Truth and Reconciliation Report, it was made very clear that the people of Liberia wanted justice. And whoever the next president is going to be should make sure that the people of Liberia obtain restorative and retributive justice. Now, the dates of jurisdiction in terms of temporal jurisdiction, those are all debatable. But certainly one of the problems that's happening right now is at least the allegations and the source information that I'm receiving is that Charles Taylor, the former president, indicted and convicted war criminal for his actions in Sierra Leone, is the leader and creator of the RUF, is now interfering with the elections. And there are allegations that he has been in discussion with Senator George Weah, who has recently signed an agreement to join forces with Jewel Taylor, Taylor's former wife, mm-hmm. to support seeking the presidency and the vice presidency. George would be at the top of the ticket. And there are allegations, and there's been reported news stories on this, as I'm sure you've seen some of them, and it's documented that he's had discussions with Charles Taylor up in the UK where he's serving his sentence. And part of those discussions is to ensure that there is never a war crimes court, special court for Liberia in Sierra Leone. And there's also other allegations that when he left, there were millions of dollars that were buried and left behind. So whoever gets elected and they seek to get his sentence reduced or commuted and to get him back in Liberia would be worth their while. So there's a lot going on, and there is some interference. And there's only been two people that have been publicly supportive of retributive and restorative justice. And that has been the current vice president, who's running for president, mm-hmm. and then Benanai Yuri. None of the other candidates that I'm aware of have supported restorative or retributive justice.
Let's go to neighboring Sierra Leone. It's understood that President Barack Obama could try to amend the constitution and stay in power. What are your views about that?
Well, you know, it's interesting for people that aren't on the continent to understand how Africa is. And what I mean by that, you know, our style of democracy in the U.S. may not be a one-size-fits-all for other countries. But certainly trying to amend the Constitution to be in permanent rule does threaten democracy. Whether people stay in office 5 years or 6 years or times two, you know, 10 years, 12 years, but there reaches a point in time where democracy is about people mm-hmm. and the rule of law and good governance. And when people stay in power too long, when the people don't want them to be there and the elections seem to be rigged, this creates what I think the undercurrent for the civil wars that have occurred in the past.
Dr. Alan White is the former chief of investigations for the United Nations Special Court for Sierra Leone. He spoke with VOA's Peter Clotty here in our Washington studio. Today is Monday, November 21st, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Let's send shout-out to our listeners on Radio Life in Lofa County and Buffalo FM in Monrovia, Liberia. Daybreak Africa time is 16 and a half minutes past the hour. A spokesman for South Sudan People's Liberation Army in opposition, SPLAIO, says its leader and former first vice president Riek Machar did not and will never ask President Salva Kiir for amnesty. A report in Sunday's Sudan Tribune newspaper quotes President Kiir as saying that a number of people have asked him to pardon Mr. Machar. The report quotes President Kiir as saying that he will not grant amnesty to Mr. Machar unless Mr. Machar renounces violence. Myong Kwon is the SPLAIO representative to the United Nations. He says, on the contrary, Dr. Machar is asking President Kiir to step down so that the killings in South Sudan will stop.
Dr. Riek Machar is the chairman of the SPLAIO. He's the commander-in-chief of the army. He has no reason for whatsoever to ask that question. In fact, Dr. Riek Machar and the old IO do not see Salva Kiir as the president. He's not legitimate to us.
So where do you suppose that the president, because the president said that Mr. Riek Machar has been approaching him, asking for pardon.
James, I'm telling you and I'm answering your question. There's no way Dr. Riek Machar would ask him for that. Dr. Riek Machar is a commander-in-chief and the chairman of the SPLA. So he has a movement that is going to change the country for the best. There's no reason he can go and ask a man that is killing his own people.
President Salva Kiir says that if he is to pardon Mr. Riek Machar, then Mr. Machar must first renounce violence.
James, this is not about Riek Machar and Salva Kiir. It's about people of South Sudan that are being killed by a president that has failed the country. So if you can see it this way, there is an uprising in Wau, that is Barakazal, where Salva Kiir comes from. There is uprising in Equatoria right now. People in Upper Nile has been fighting the same president. Where do you find Riek Machar to go and ask for pardon from Salva Kiir? There is no way. The public in South Sudan is rejecting Salva Kiir. In fact, they would vote for Riek Machar rather than Salva Kiir. But Salva Kiir is keeping the war on. We went to Juba. Myself, I was in Juba for 7 months. Riek Machar went to Juba. But it turned out to be it was dupe, and they wanted to kill him. To kill everybody that is opposing Salva Kiir Mayardit. That's what the regime in Juba is doing right now. So if you say that is about Riek Machar, it's not about Dr. Riek Machar. Riek Machar is just a leader of people that have fed up with Salva Kiir.
You mentioned the violence in Wau and Equatoria. Who is behind that violence?
The soldiers loyal to Salva Kiir Mayardit are the ones that are carrying out the violence in Wau. They are carrying out the violence in many areas in Equatoria, specifically in Yei, in Morobo, wherever in the western part of Equatoria as well and central part of Equatoria. In Juba itself, people are dying daily, and this is targeted killing in Juba. As we speak right now, nobody can say anything in Juba. People are silent.
So again, once again, you are saying that Dr. Riek Machar has never asked Salva Kiir for amnesty.
Dr. Riek Machar has not and will never, ever ask for that. In fact, he's asking for Salva Kiir to step down. And again, let me tell you, Dr. Riek Machar is asking his brother, Salva Kiir, to step down so that the killing of people is stopped. Someone needs to lead the country, and it's not Salva Kiir going to do that.
Mio Kwon is the SPLA in opposition representative to the United Nations. You're speaking with me. Many, however, are finding it hard to pick up their pieces of their old lives. Mohammed Yusuf reports from Kismayo.
This woman, talking with her mother, returned to Somalia after spending years living at the Dadaab refugee camp in Kenya. Life hasn't been easy because they don't have a home of their own.
I spent 2 days and two nights in the Kismayo Transit Center. I left the center and moved to the city, to a relative's house. We don't have a home here. I still live with relatives.
More than 18,000 former residents of Dadaab have come back to Kismayo since Kenya indicated last year it will close the camp, which used to house more than 300,000 Somali refugees. Most of the returnees have ended up in camps like this one, with no essential services. Ibrahim Hassan, a returnee and a father of nine, bought land in Kismayo to start a new life, but it turned out the person he bought it from was not the genuine owner. Authorities evicted him after he built a house.
I was compensated with another piece of land. It's disheartening for a refugee and a poor man like me to be evicted from his original home. It's still a difficult move.
Authorities in the Jubaland region have refused to accept more returnees. Mohamed Noor, the vice chairman of Jubaland's refugee and IDP's agency, says life has been hard for the returnees.
In Somalia, the basic services are not there. Most of the returnees are living with the IDPs. Some cannot pay their rent. Some are living with their relatives as they try to adapt here. These people need assistance.
This week, the Kenyan government postponed the closure of the Dadaab camp for 6 months, saying it will give time for the situation in Somalia to improve before more refugees are sent home. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Kismayo, Somalia.
An intense football or soccer action has kicked off in Cameroon after Saturday's official opening of the 2016 Women's Africa Football Cup of Nations. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from festive Yaoundé.
After waiting for long, anxiously waiting.
The 2016 Women's Africa Football Cup of Nations anthem has been blasting through speakers in major junctions of Cameroon's capital Yaoundé since the country's president, Paul Biya, declared the tournament open.
Je déclare officiellement ouverte.
He says he officially declares open the 10th Women's Africa Football Cup of Nations. In the opening match, host Cameroon mounted pressure on Egypt, scoring in the 23rd minute when Aboudi Ongene's header beat Egypt's goalkeeper Maha Sehata to a thunderous applause from an estimated 40,000 home crowd. Captain Mani Christine scored the second goal and sent Cameroon fans dancing and celebrating the whole night. Egyptian delegation leader Saharel Hawari says Cameroon was a better side and had the encouragement of its public.
If you're playing with the host, it's a lot of pressure because of the spectators and the homeland and the media and the people and the response, you know, it's not easy.
Zimbabwe and South Africa played a 0-0 tie in the second Group A fixture. Ellis Desire, head coach of the South African team, says she is optimistic her team can still make it, even though it will face the group's favorite, Cameroon, on November 22.
I think any coach coming to the tournament would want to win it. You go to a match, not to draw, to lose, but you go to win it.
In Group B, based in Limbe, cup holder Nigeria beat Mali 6-0. Nigerian-born Obi Paul says he is sure his country will keep the trophy.
We are going to give them moral support, even financial support, to see that they maintain their trophy back home, Nigeria.
Bimila Etienne does not agree. He thinks his country, Cameroon, will win.
I'm optimistic that Cameroon is going to play very well, despite the fact that the Nigerians are showing up to be a very strong team. But I hope that Cameroon will challenge them, given that we are in Cameroon.
The eight-team tournament also includes Ghana, Kenya, South Africa and Zimbabwe, and concludes with the championship game December 3. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria, with the rest of Daybreak Africa Sports. Good morning to you, Samson.
Good morning, James. We begin with the 2016 African Women Cup of Nations, which kicked off in Cameroon on Saturday. The hosts in the opening game beat Egypt 2-0 to go top of Group A. In the other group game, Bayana played a 0-0 draw in their opening match against neighbors Zimbabwe. In Sunday's game, Arsenal ladies forward Asisat Oshoala was the star of the Super Falcons of Nigeria's opening game, scoring 4 goals and assisting one as the reigning African Women's Champions. Nigeria started their title defense with a 6-0 thrashing of Mali in Limbe on Sunday evening. In the other Group B game played on Sunday, Black Wings of Ghana beat debutante Kenya 3-1 in Group B. Staying with women's football, one of Africa's representatives at the 2016 FIFA Under-20 Football Championship holding in Papua New Guinea, the Falconets of Nigeria, crashed out of the competition despite beating group leader Spain 2-1 in their final game on Sunday. Now to club football, where Mamelodi Sundowns gave a performance befitting African champions at the club level to defeat Kaizer Chiefs 2-1 this weekend in a high-profile South African Premiership showdown. And to Egypt, where Halley returned to the league summit after cruising to an easy 2-0 Egyptian league victory over El Etnang El Habi on Saturday. 2 second-half goals from Nigerian forward Junior Ajayi and Egypt playmaker Abdullah El Said gave Al Halley their 7th win in 9 games in their bid to defend their league title. Staying with the Egyptian Premier League, Moeman Suleiman has resigned as Zamalek boss in the wake of chairman Murtada Mansour's skating attack on the team management following the 1-0 Egyptian League home victory of our bottom side Tanta. Elsewhere in Europe, Victor Moses has picked up his second Man of the Match award for Chelsea this season after he was voted as a Man of the Match in a 1-0 win over Middlesbrough. The Nigerian, who was substituted at the tail end of the game, was one of the liveliest players on the pitch for Chelsea, tormenting Borough's left-back Fabio at will. And to the German Bundesliga, where Borussia Dortmund ended Bayern Munich's unbeaten run, edging a 1-0 win on Saturday, all thanks to current African Footballer of the Year player Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang's 12th goal of the season, cutting the gap between the champions and their biggest title rivals to 3 points. Elsewhere, Yaya Toure demonstrated that it is never too late to say sorry as he made a triumphant return to Manchester City on Saturday, which made his manager Pep Guardiola feel as if he had almost signed a brand new player. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports for this Monday morning. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. Over to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson, and have a good day. And that's it for this Monday, November 21st edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, along with our engineer Charles Hall, I'm James Botte in Washington, wishing everyone in Africa will have a very productive week.
Next on Straight Talk Africa, Joyce Banda, the former president of Malawi, she'll discuss what Africa can learn from the U.S. elections and the peaceful transition of power from one leader to another. That's right here on Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
I love Sunny Side of Sports.
Please join us for a whole half hour of sports talk and news. Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC GMT. On the internet, you can like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Visit voaafrica.com and enjoy the show.